The first is fear.
I shattered that misconception. I didn't want to be put in a box. I wanted to see what I could do. How do you compete?
Welcome back, everybody, to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Holman. I am so excited today. I am hoping I can keep up with the energy of our guest. I've heard Richard Blank speak a little bit before, and I'm like, I gotta up my game today to keep up with Richard. Richard, it's so good to have you on the show.
Jeff, so happy to be with you. Can't wait to share ideas. Have a good time.
Yeah, we're going to have a great time here today. So you came recommended from somebody. It sounds like we were just talking before this. We might have a couple cross connections in the podcasting world. A former guest, somebody who helped me early on with the show. Several connections going on there. I think you're a pretty well-connected guy too, overall, aren't you?
The greatest compliment, Jeff, is when people speak about you behind your back in a good way. So your reputation precedes you.
Yeah. So you came highly recommended to come on and share your experience starting up the Costa Rica call center. And we'll get into that stuff. I think you've been doing that for quite a while. But I have to start out by asking maybe the really obvious question. Maybe you're sick of telling people about it, but what in the world is going on with this the collections that you have? You collect a few things and some arcade machines or some pinball machines, stuff like that, right? Where did that all come from?
When I was growing up in the 80s, everyone wanted Ricky Schroeder's Silver Spoons arcade. And finally, when I had some cash and time in the room, I went out and bought it. One man's trash is another man's treasure. Arcades are going out of business. And so I don't mind driving a couple hours with a wad full of 20s, a couple of my buddies, and bringing back these machines and restoring them. So currently 13 pinball machines, 5 jukeboxes, and I'm living a childhood dream. I actually have a beautiful home arcade. I get to play. And thank you for bringing that up. If someone follows through on their passion and really truly knows what makes them happy, it's nothing like buying that painting and putting it on the wall. It just gives you joy. And when I play those machines, I can decompress. I love to restore them. And my favorite decade is the 1970s. You get one of those electromechanical machines. Oh, the artwork, the marquees, just the gameplay. So I fall in love with them and I know what I like. Anyone that comes visits me, you get to play as much as you like.
Play the pinball. Hey, what's the furthest you've traveled to pick up one of these machines?
You know, I'll go 5 hours for this.
Yeah.
I've shipped them from the United States. Let me put it this way. You're willing to do whatever it takes. And but it's interesting. I've seen the extremes. I've seen the guy that just has them in a bodega with a bunch of other machines. He just picks them up and tries to resell them. And then you have the collector. It's up in the mountains. A guy from Canada moved on. He's got to get rid of it. And so when they put it out there, there's very few of us in this country. A very good friend of mine, Martin, up in Tamarindo, he collects them as well and restores them. So he and I are always treasure hunting. But we're a small crew. We know the value. A lot of people just think they're turnkey. No, you really need to replace certain parts and keep them well. And the worst thing you could ever do is bump and move a machine. It's the biggest insult if you're playing with somebody. And so my point being is if you can find a beautiful classic for under $1,000 or $2,000, put it in your living room. All your friends will hang out. It's better than a piano. It's not like the 1950s. So yeah, a lot of people will hang out, do some retro gaming, and you'll be the talk of the town.
Well, I love that. I have not spent time in Costa Rica, but when you said you had this collection, but you're in, my thought was you're in Costa Rica. Is there a lot of this in Costa Rica, or is this like even harder to find because of where you're at?
Yeah, like unicorns, so few and far between. And my friend Martin, myself, Don Francisco, and a couple other players were always looking. And so when something comes up, we jump at it, we share the ideas, we figure out collectively how to save this treasure and put them in a home where they're played and taken care of. But these arcades are so out of business. I did it at my call center just to create a happy medium and a place for people to let off steam and meet each other. But as much as I thought back in my time, people would be lining up to play Pac-Man and air hockey. These kids would rather be on their phone looking at Japanese anime or Instagram and not talking to one another. And so I can't push them on it. But at least if they've played it, they've known that they've experienced something that either their parents have or they'll never be able to play again. And if they see it in an old movie or someone reference it, they're like, hey, at least I did play this incredible machine. Oh, but they see my passion. It's a great way for them to hit me on the shoulder in the morning and say, hey, boss, how you doing? And so what a nice place for me to be.
I love that. And you bring up this point about connection and experience. I mean, I'm going to ask you later in the show, and I don't know when and I don't know how it's going to come up, but I'm sure it's going to come up because I'm going to say, how does this relate back to collecting pinballs, the business side of things? And I don't know what that answer is going to be. I'm prepping you now for the question because I feel like we've got to draw some connection there if that's possible. But you bring up you bring up this idea of people connecting with the game or with the past or having had the experience. I was mentioning to you, you know, I'm just less than 24 hours back from Italy with the family. And I feel the same way about travel, you know, whether we spend, an afternoon going through the Colosseum or 4 days or 5 days in, you know, the French countryside, like being able to go somewhere and experience it, it might be a little bit like being able to experience the pinball game from the past. And you've at least been there. You may not live there. You may not go back anytime soon, but you've been there. And it just, I don't know, it adds a depth to kind of the human experience. Is that kind of what you're describing with the pinball machines?
Of course, my good friend. Jeff, you're so busy. Look at your daily routine with your four kids, your beautiful wife, and your business. It's a crazy circle. And when you and I, prior to the podcast, discussed your incredible trip to Italy, the way you were describing it, it was like a kid on a Saturday just climbing trees and having fun and playing games. And so it's nice to see that balance, Jeff, that you have that in your life and that you drink life. And I asked you, how did your children feel about that? Was it a life-changing experience? And you said, absolutely. And so it just doesn't have to be the Colosseum or Venice or Rome, okay? Just snapping out of this zone people are in and having some sort of different stimulation. You're in the now. And if somebody laughs, you see a different side of them. Somebody cries at you. And if you're standing there at the Colosseum with your children and you're not even saying a single word, but you're taking it in, look at that bonding and anchoring and bridging experience. So 10 years from now, like, hey kids, remember the Colosseum? You're like, yeah, pops, that was the best trip. Thank you so much. I really got to feel it. Now when I see Maximus and Gladiator, I get it. You're like, yeah, man. And so you're enriching their culture. You're expanding their thoughts. And I'm not saying that pinball is the be all end all. Their boss loves it. And I want them to see that I'm non-threatening. And enjoy the lights and the sound. Why? Because you're about to walk upstairs and make 8 hours worth of phone calls. if you can somehow go through the Willy Wonka chocolate river before going to work, maybe it reduces attrition. You might meet someone from another department. You might laugh with me. And so I'm just trying to recreate a neutral form of happy energy. You did it through art and through travel. In my confined, controlled space, I put in life. I allowed you to do something that's play. So you can go back to the earlier days of when you were just free.
Yeah.
Everyone's so serious these days. That's why the movie Big with Tom Hanks was great. Guy's dancing on a piano with the owner of the company. Why do you think the guy got promoted so fast? The kids that can play Pac-Man with me, hang out with their boss, get a slice of pizza, those are the ones that are rising to the top because they get the culture and they're able to connect with people on a wonderful level.
Yeah, brings so many things to mind. I've seen friends who go snowmobiling with their bosses and they seem to do a lot better than I do when I'm like, no, I don't have time to go rock climbing with you. You know, there is an experience. And I wonder if you might be emulating between you and your employees exactly what you're asking your employees to do with the people they're calling, right? You've presented an opportunity for them to connect with you. And we haven't gotten into your call center business yet at all, but at some level, you're inviting your employees to find a connection with the people they're calling, right? That you got to find that common ground. Otherwise, you get, I imagine they get a lot of, hey, not today. I'm, you know, take me off a call list or whatever that is, I'm not doing that. But when you, but when they connect over something that's more human, I'll bet the success rates just go through the roof.
Just a quick note about our guests. I host the Breakout CEO podcast to share behind the scenes insights from scaling businesses. As an attorney, I see the real challenges leaders face long before success becomes public. But client stories have to stay confidential. So we invite guest CEOs to share their own moments of struggle and success. I'm so grateful to our guests and my team at Intellectual Strategies for making this show possible. Now, let's get back to the show.
Absolutely. I'd like to finish your last comment about snowmobiling with your boss.
Yeah.
No, Jeff, that's your time. That's your family time. I'm not asking you to go out drinking with me after work. I never did that with my boss. Not like I'm a straight lace. You don't need to know my stories. I'm not hanging out till 7, 8 o'clock taking shots. You got to be kidding me. Then I say I got to make some money. So I respect my time and I respect your time. I'm not going to ask for that extra time unless it's the Christmas party or something. But I'm talking about your 2 15-minute breaks and 1 half-an-hour lunch and during the day a potential knock on my door. If you see me downstairs and you'd rather be on Instagram compared to hanging out with me or knocking on my door, hey, what's up, Jeff? Hey, Richie, just got to let you know, boss, I got 3 today. Man, you know, come on.
Yeah.
Positive escalation, positive reinforcement. That's all. I'm not going to force you to hang out with me after work. It's not cool. That's your time. I just wanted to let you know that as a boss. But if you found time to meet with me in the middle during office hours, that means that the light is attractive. So now Let's get back to you making phone calls. The first thing you have to do is have romantic deaths. Why? You're making 200 phone calls in a day. You said you're going to get hung up on. It's not my fault. But I also believe in jumping clouds and romantic deaths. What do you mean? You might get shot down at the 8th grade dance, but all your boys are envious of you. You had the guts to walk across that floor and ask Susan Ellis to dance. Just wasn't happening. You know, it just wasn't that day. And so it builds character. And so what I try to do here, I want to extend and pay forward specific soft skills, or let's just say bedside manner. Diplomacy and strategy and perfect delivery. So what you do on the phone, and we'll get to that in a minute, you and I can do outside of the office, Jeff. I can save a marriage or a Thanksgiving dinner. And I can make beautiful friends and have a very nice life if I learn how to communicate and especially listen properly. We're on a Zoom, we're on a video call right now. We get to see each other, but the majority of these calls are sight unseen. So if you're removing your taste, touch, and smell, your hearing should be expanded, understand. But then again, there's something called image streaming. You should be using extremely colorful and descriptive vocabulary. And you should be thinking of 30-second checkpoints. You speak, me speak, some pausing, confirmations. Check, move on, first down.
Yeah.
Then you get touchdowns. You might have to grind it out. Maybe you have to go 12 rounds in this fight. These aren't knockouts. But if you really want to make a nice first impression, do some due diligence. You and I listened to each other's podcast, corresponded prior to this today. So such momentum. We're already starting as strangers, which are friends that have not met yet. And So that was very interesting today, Jeff. We both really knew of one another prior to personally meeting. And so if you have the time and luxury, do that. But if not, give yourself a solid first impression. I usually like to say a company name spike. If I called your company, I'd go, the Breakout CEO, how you doing today? You want to say we're good and hang out with me? Fine, Jeff, do that 200 times a day, at least. What a romantic death. I said The name of your podcast better than you did. And so what usually happens there is this strategy. I'm using anonymity, not for the whole call. That's shady. But if I give my first impression, why not give you the box with a bow? And it's a mystery box. You have no idea what it is, but you know it looks and sounds good. I said the name of your company. I'm non-threatening. Judy, your secretary, is going to snap out of it. You told me earlier, hey, we're not interested. Hang up or take me off the list. You're not going to get that from Judy. She's going to give you a positive reinforcement. She's going to say, who's this? Compared to, why are you calling and take them off the list?
Yeah.
And then you would say, hi, my name is Jeff Holman. It's Richard Blank. And then you're going to double dip. They're not going to say, is this a sales call? Take me off your list. You still are riding on the vibe of the company name spike. You could still be Jeff's best friend or best client. She still has to be nice with you. Doesn't know who you are yet. So then you double dip. And then she would say, well, who is Richard Blank? Thank you, Judy. So at least you got it. You got the foot in the door. You reduce some defense that they have. You reduce the anonymity because you called them out. You said the name of their company better than they did. You properly introduced yourself. All right. Now you got a fair shot at it. Well, yeah. Let's play.
Now do your odds have gone way up.
And then I got something better for you. Before I get transferred to you, Jeff, as the CEO of the Breakout CEO, I'm going to let Judy know that she was very nice, professional, helpful, whatever. And I'm going to say, I'm going to let Jeff know too. So I get transferred, and before even introducing myself, it's not the company name spike. I already did that. Hi, this is Joe. Oh, I just got to let you know, Judy's great. I have no idea who I am. But naturally, you're going to go, of course she is. Who is this? It's Richard Blank. Who is Richard Blank? Here's your 30 seconds.
And now you got a
positive escalation in there. You complimented Judy. Now you do your pitch. Military alphabet, tie down questions, transitional sentences. Wrap it all up, meeting minutes. Mention Judy in the email because it's a written escalation. That's even better. And then when you call back for Jeff's meeting Tuesday at 3 o'clock, Judy answers the phone. Ring me. Hey, Judy, is this Richard Blank? Yes, it is. Heroes, welcome. Oh, by the way, before you get on with Jeff, A, B, C, and D. Anniversaries, kids' baseball game, trip to Italy, you name it. Just additional goodies, like when they straighten Bud Fox's tie in Wall Street before meeting Gordon Gekko. Sometimes the gatekeeper can be your greatest ally once you understand the parameters and company culture. And so I always believe by that first impression of good faith has at least increased my metrics of giving me a 30-second shot of potentially speaking with a decision maker.
Man, I feel like that's a whole lesson. Like that's a semester of communications right there. university level studies. That was like the intro to be unpacked over the next 6 months, right? How do you take this and translate this? Because you're, again, not to be so mystified by it myself, but to you know, resolve that for me. How did you take all of this and decide to do a company where you're able to kind of bring the magic not only into a difficult, maybe difficult, I think from the outside perceived as difficult line of business, but do it in a totally different language? Like that seems like, oh, let's take something hard and make it harder and then be successful at it. Am I out in left field that this is a hard industry, or that doing it in another language in another country adds complexity to it? What is your take on having started a business outside, you know, being from the U.S., outside the U.S. in a different language and an industry that can be seen as difficult, perhaps?
I'm going to give you two visuals and then I'll get serious.
Okay.
Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Look at the beginning of that movie. Did you just want him walking in the cave and walking out? Come on, life is about zig and zags and twists and turns, and you need a hero's journey or it's not a good journey at all. Yeah. And every James Bond movie was incredible for even the opening credits. Yeah, pack it on. Another country, different language, far from my home. What else you want to give me? Give it all. As long as it's not illegal or something that is unethical.
Yeah.
Why not? Come on, Jeff. What else are you going to do? It's just like another adventure. But I tell you what, I made very good decisions. I was building on momentum initially. Spanish was my major in college. So by moving to a country where Spanish is their main language, I was one of the Anglo-Sajones, the extron heroes, one of the North Americans from the United States that was capable of communicating properly in their language. Yeah. So that was a great first impression. Also, it was a wonderful defense. If I didn't let people know that I spoke Spanish, wanted to make sure that everything is cool. And so I sometimes was reserved. And so that worked to my advantage. Secondly, when I came here, I was with friends. And so a friend of mine owned a center here. I was only supposed to be teaching English for 60 days. When I walked into that environment, the average age was 24. It was like 13th grade. It's like post-college. It was fun. And all these individuals, such learned bilingual individuals, were talking on the phone. And I knew this. There's certain environments where you know you could do it. You just need to learn it. And when I was there and I sat with the people, hey, Mr. CEO, the greatest ones learn it from the inside out. There was a movie back in the day called Brubaker with Robert Redford. It was incredible. He was like a prisoner before he became the warden. And so, you know, the undercover boss.
Yeah, yeah.
And so say what you want about my 19 years as a CEO. The greatest experience I got was walking the rows and sitting with the people and seeing what it was like to take calls for 8 hours a day. And so it gave me the inside in regards to empathy and the things that made people break and what got them to even cry. And so I wanted to, when I sat there, avoid all of those things at all costs, because I was in those shoes and I know what it takes. And I tell you what, telemarketing has a bad rap and Hollywood glamorizes it, but there is a lot of retention agents at companies that save accounts. There are superior customer support executives that are able to clarify doubt, get referrals, get upsells, you name it. These are individuals that are so frontline. And unlike today, Jeff, where people are looking for non-voice support, such as chat, email, texting, AI, and I'm with that. It's excellent for gathering and communicating. But when you and I are heightened with anxiety, stress, or even excitement, you may want to speak with somebody, especially if it's with a law firm, a doctor's office, an airline, you name it. And so people are willing to still press zero. So empathy could be extended and they can get their stress out or speak to a supervisor and compliment you. And so, yes, a portion, if not a good portion of my industry will be replaced with frontline AI gathering, voice response. Okay, but when somebody needs to get that ball into the end zone or really have that relationship with somebody, there will be incredible people that will be working with them. And so Uncanny Valley, the more that these machines sound, look, and act like us, especially with natural pausing, it's going to freak us out a little bit. And as much as you like 1,000 prints, I'll still pay for the one painting. I'll still take the individual. And so I still believe in my industry will have that sort of longevity. And so I hope in a certain roundabout way, my friend, that answered your question.
No, I think it does. It's there's a challenge. I mean, everybody who's starting their own business, you do it. I'd say eyes wide open, but they're only open as wide as you can open them. Right. We don't know everything we're jumping into, but we do it because we like the challenge. You know, and so I can see that it's getting into the challenge and adding in another country or another language. That's just an incremental challenge on top of the challenge that you're already seeking out actively anyway. So that makes sense. And thanks for walking through that. You've been doing this since, was it 2008 or 2009 that you've been doing this as the CEO after your...
Didn't start like you think.
Oh, tell us how it started.
No, first the website with Flash. Yeah. In October of 2007 and then February 6th of 2008, I landed my first account, which was one seat for 1 week. I don't do that now, but that was my buddy and wanted to test me. And then we grew. Our largest at one time was 187. But how do you grow a company in another country with limited funds? And so I was renting space, Jeff, like a seat at an internet cafe, really. So I was doing station by station. That was turnkey. It wasn't a real internet cafe. It was an office that was renting me rooms as I could grow. And so they had IT support. It wasn't glamorous, but it was exciting. It was raw. And so there was a certain point where my pay per seat was too much. I could be getting my own space and starting to build a company.
So right, right.
After 2.5 years and I had stable clients and some capital, I rented space and started buying secondhand Dells because I didn't want to pay 80% import tax for brand new computers. Yeah. So thankfully in my industry, I could scale with used furniture and equipment, which was amazing. And let them pay for the import. So it was great. And so I did that for 6 years. And then I decided to purchase a building and equip it for 300 people. And then COVID hit and everyone went home. So I'm sitting on a building and everyone's working from home. And so it was a gradual stage. As grandma says, if you don't do it in cash, don't do it at all. And I was extremely responsible with the labor laws and payments here because I'm a guest here. The last thing I want, and I saw this in movies, is what pitchforks and torches. I don't need that. I just want to be well-liked and well-respected as I'm a guest here.
Yes, I've been in a few countries and a few situations where I'm like, I don't feel like I'm far enough away from that middle line at the moment, being asked to do things or being threatened by other people who don't like what I'm doing. And, you know, I'm like, I'm the attorney, but I've got local counsel. I'll call local counsel. We'll have them handle this one. So I kind of know what you're talking about in a sense there. But, so this has been a bootstrap business then for you. And you've built it up that way mostly, it sounds like.
I had no partners. I didn't want to have to make desperate decisions. And, yeah. I wish I was fancier in the beginning. I might have landed different clients. But in my industry, thankfully, 80% of my clients never came to Costa Rica. So they didn't see the initial, you know, look of the center. But it really wasn't that. I mean, say what you want. I love working out. I've been doing it since I was 17. I worked out in so many different types of gyms. As long as it's clean and the equipment isn't break, I don't need the bells and the whistles. And so like Rocky III, he trained in the fancy gym, got beat up, and then went to the gym with Apollo with the leaking pipes in the eye of the tiger and look what it produced. The greatest gym I ever trained in was called Ed's Gym on the top of Foxcroft Pavilion in Jenkintown, Pennsylvania. When I was working out with guys that were getting off of the construction site, I mean, high school, these guys are ripping it. And so you got to understand gym etiquette and make you step up. You see men that are three times your size. And so it was so funny, man. They were like Corey Everson and Heather Thomas posters on the wall. Listening to YSP. That was cool back in the 80s. Should have been there. Yeah.
I love that. Well, no, but that's how a lot of businesses start up. There's no shame in starting up in an efficient way, right? Like that's how you do it. And yeah,
it's only the people.
And you're in a people business, like for what it's worth. It's every business to a large extent is people business, but you're in a very, very people forward business, both having a lot of employees or people on your team. And then also those people are all interacting with other people all day long, you know, 200 calls a day. It's extremely people focused business. Have you always been a people person? I mean, you're very outgoing, very, you know, very gregarious or whatever the right word might be. You're easy to talk with. You're very expressive. So you've got the characters. Have you always had this kind of this tendency to be the outgoing people person?
Well, man, I guess it's two extremes. I'm never really in the middle. I mean, I'm always, as you say, on in a certain way. If I'm hitting the gym, playing pinball, washing the car, doing podcasts. But there are times where it's not being introverted, just balance, quietness, alone time. I can't say meditation, but there are certain social situations where I'm more the observer. I don't want to compete, or it's just not my place, or just not feeling groovy that night. So
yeah,
I decide just to, but it doesn't mean I'm in a bad mood or I don't like you. It's just, I think, unfortunately, and I've seen this recently, and the tell sign is the phone. People will be with you physically, but they're not with you mentally. And obviously, it's the phone. That's one thing. But before the phone, it's just glazing or not paying attention. And sometimes it's not their fault. We're adults. Who knows what's going on in their lives? And so you and I might never get a chance to see each other. We finally get a chance to have a burger, and you're just not there. I can't get angry at you, man. You got four kids, you got things going. And so That's my only thing. Even if it's 5 minutes, I'll take your 5 minutes compared to an hour of space, you know, just if you can somehow. Yeah. And that's the way I look at it. But how about this? I'm going to pay a compliment to you. Maybe you bring the best out of people. Maybe you said you watched a couple podcasts. Maybe I'm more excited on yours because Jeff's the man and he's asking really good questions and, you know, put me in a good frame of mind. So it goes both ways, my friend. And here's the best part about these podcasts. I've done a bunch and I've never sold a book. Most people hate telemarketers, so I'm really just trying to defend it, not sell it. But crazy enough, I feel like I have an interesting message to share by training 10,000 people and being in a linguistic environment, as you had mentioned. I've seen things. I've seen patterns. Forget the CEO thing. Anyone's CEO. I was just in the center of, as you say, a very fun linguistic environment for close to, you know, 25 years. So,
yeah.
How much fun. The stars were aligned. It was a luxury trade. I created my own job. It should have never happened. I should have been selling real estate with my dad and brother back in the States. But I wanted to see, Jeff, what I could do. And if my best was 44 push-ups, that's it. And I would live with no regret. That weight will be lifted. And what I did, I sometimes look back and I'm surprised at it. Why? Because of that crossroads. The times when you're almost broke, or your person you believed in you the most says, don't do it.
Yeah.
Or your ribs hurt. You know, you got to keep going. There is that thing that's in you that you need to live with yourself. And each person understands that. I'm not going to try to force that thought on others. But yeah. I've known that when I've had to make the most deepest decisions that are long term, that's when you go there.
Yeah, that's when the real character comes out at that point. What are some of the patterns that you've seen that you know, as you think back on your career, either as a CEO or, you know, in your journey towards where you are today? What are the important patterns that stand out to you?
The first is fear. It's just of the unknown or people putting insecurities in you. But I'm not asking you to boast or to pick on people. But there's nothing wrong with having a strong back and putting your chest out and your chin up. There's nothing wrong with looking in someone's eyes and remembering names. Are there haters out there? They hate themselves. I'm non-threatening. I just happen to have a certain spring in my step. And why do I do this? Keeps me going. How else are you going to do forced marches? How else are you going to move? So I'm sorry that you find certain weights or you need to be dragged or you have no vision. And I'm going to say it again. A lot of it is from societal, parental, or financial pressures. Oh, if anyone could choose their own life. But people are in too deep. And so most of their decisions, hopefully, are responsible. But you know what the fear thing is? It's two fears. It's one of the rejection, or it's the fear of actually getting what you want. Are you prepared for it?
Yes.
And for me, I lived a certain life where I kind of shoot first and ask questions later on certain decisions, because if I thought about it too much, I'd punk out. And so you just kind of have to go with the flow. It's Dionysus. You're just living in the moment. It's like a sort of fiesta party sort of attitude where you're drinking wine, eating grapes, and, you know, flirting. You know, you're just letting loose and shedding skin. And it's a beautiful way to live. That's why it's very interesting when you see people on vacation. You really get to see a true side of them when they do, you know, the limbo, or they're hanging at the pool and they're telling jokes. They're like, aren't you like this back home? It's because I'm stuck. Well, I never wanted to be in that Japanese railway car. And I never wanted to be one of those faceless suits that are walking down the concrete jungles going to some no-named office building or just Pink Floyd breaking the wall. That scared the daylights out of me. I'd rather die. And so I didn't want that gilded cage. I didn't want a life handed to me, either through private school connections or college fraternity buddy hookups or parents, friends, introductions, or just my father and brother starting a company and just bringing Richie in and giving me accounts. That sounded wonderful. A dream to many. An easy life. But I wouldn't have been satisfied.
Not and Richard's so, life.
It's not even Richard's life, my friend. Yeah. It's just living with true intentions. Felt weird like that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, do you find that this fear comes up with your team members? Is this something that you're able to help them like manage? Because this would the phenomenal thing about what you're talking about, and I see this with, you know, I've been working with innovators and founders for a long time now, and when I work with inventors specifically, I realize there are kind of four fears that they deal with, right? And that stop them from actually doing the things that they want to be doing. They want to create a new product or invent something and bring it to the world, but then they don't because they have these fears. One of them, ironically, is the fear of success, like you mentioned. What if it actually works? I could see that in the line of business where, well, and I'll just say it this way. I have a few family members who, when you ask them to make a phone call, they're like, I don't want to. I'm like, it's just a phone call. You're like ordering pizza or you're asking what time the store closes. And they're like, I don't want to. So I could see some really, those might be more extreme fears. But in the business that you're in, not only are you recognizing that how fear stops people and how it's impacted your life, but you get a chance to teach people how to do their job better by overcoming fear. And that probably translates outside of the job into a more fulfilling life for them. Like there's levels to this fear conversation that are much bigger and broader and more impactful than just simply how were the performance KPIs this week, right?
That's right. First is everyone needs to calm down. Everyone gets so excited. That's number one. Number two, prior to you joining the team, when we're interviewing you, and there's all the bells and whistles, and I want to be supervisor and all your accolades. You know, Jeff, do me a favor, turn your paper over and give me a coming of age moment. I want to know when you beat up a bully, saved a kitten. I don't know. How many people did you save out of that house with a fire? Why? Let me see if you can zig and zag. Because if you're sitting in front of Jeff about to close a contract and he's comparing you, go, is he capable of working with you? Do you have any depth? Who are you? And also, when it's a rainy Wednesday and someone just hung up on you, I can call you the bully beater and the kitten saver. I can make a cool nickname for you. Yeah. I don't know. But I just want to see for a minute, can you remove the curtain and show me who Oz is? Maybe be the kitchen that has clear windows so you can see what's in the kitchen. What are you afraid of? And so if somebody is able to, you don't need to disclose your life with me. Oh, come on, man. Give me a moment. Let me see what you're made of. That's number one. So if I can put that fear to bed where you become vulnerable, Jeff, for a minute, you know, that only makes you powerful. You saw the statue of David when you're in Milan. Guy's butt naked. Has no armor, no jewels, nothing. But it's an extremely powerful image of man.
Yeah.
And so my point being is you don't need anything to be powerful. It's just really, that's the first thing. And second, in regards to people making phone calls, come on, man, you're pushing them in the deep end. It's not fair. Once people start removing that uncertainty, when to use a name drop, when to use a military alphabet, how to ask tie-down questions, if things make sense, sound good, may we move forward. Clarification questions. Remember the positive escalation with Judy, company name spike. Then it becomes fun. Then you avoid the fat. And then it's interesting. Let's talk the gym. Oh, man, it hurts when you get in there. Not if you've been working out for a while. Once a runner's high and the gym burn, you want that now. You yeah. want that burn. And so when you make these phone calls, when you get really good, you overwhelm the people. You're like a person that can dance the waltz. You are so well polished, so well trained, have every rebuttal. It's just your decision of the sort of tone that you want. Do you want to be New York aggressive? You want to be California cool or something in the middle? You know, it's just your temperature levels. But what a beautiful art of speech. What a beautiful dance for people if they learn how to be diplomatic, strategic, and use specific semantics, certain vocabulary that is non-offensive and maintains the tone in a positive way. It's unbelievable how your talk time just gets expanded and your conversion ratios increase.
That's beautiful. You're making me wonder, like, when people come and work for you, does their confidence increase? Like, do you see them become different people as you teach them these tools, give them the skills to actually go out and do the objectives? I mean, I'm picturing myself walking into like eighth grade wood shop right now, and there's 100 tools out there, and somebody's made some really beautiful piece of wood that's on display for the last 15 years because it's so nice. And I walk in there, I'm like, well, I don't know how to use that tool. I don't know how to use that tool. I don't, that one will cut my fingers off. And there's this intimidation factor, but I, you know, and I haven't been in woodshop, probably since eighth grade. So I don't go into a woodshop and say, oh, I totally know what I'm doing and I can make these beautiful pieces of furniture. But if someone comes and works with you, I get the impression that they are learning the skills. They know their way around the wood shop, so to speak, and they become confident artisans. Is that accurate?
Well, you have to show them something first. I can't be all hat and no cattle. So when I'm doing certain training sessions, you get me. But this is what you do get, my friend. I'm going to make you stand up, Jeff. So you're in front of 20 people now. So you're going to come to the front of the class with me. Now, besides practicing pitching, you're practicing public speaking, which is worse than even making a telemarketing call. So we put that to bed. Awesome. Secondly, I'm going to make you put the script in your left hand and use your right hand as illustrators. Why? So you can pace yourself. I'm going to teach you to pace yourself and to illustrate. Does it look funny? Absolutely. But look at Orson Welles in The War of the Worlds or Basil Rathbone. When he was Sherlock Holmes with Nigel Bruce, they had to be expressive. It gives 15% oomph. 15% oomph. And then they practice their pitching with me where they got a look in my eyes. It's even tougher. And if they have a tough time, look in the middle. So what am I doing? I'm triple stacking you in your training, Goofy. What am I doing? You're ripping it. You're doing master's level communication, confidence building in your first day. Does it work? 9 out of 10. One kid quits. Not me. He quits himself. But when people come back, they see my wheelhouse. I gradually introduce levels for them. But the one level that they love most is the thesaurus. We're constantly upgrading their vocabulary. And so we take out the word help, we put in assist, guide, and lend a hand. They love those. Yes. Not excuse me, it's, hey, Jeff, for my clarification. Or if they want an SAT word, for my edification.
Yeah.
Things like that. And so they're constantly running and giving me words that they think are juicy, that give butterflies, that can prolong conversations and maintain a positive tone. And so don't be lazy with your speech. And so obviously, a lot of the times I have them make specific pauses. Why? Because it's not you saying something. You might go, that counts too. And so I just want to make sure that you're receiving reactions for these checkpoints. And if you do that, it reduces the stress and you can use what's reduced into your momentum. And that's what gives you this. And so if you have this mindset, like the real players do, making 200 phone calls a day, 5 or even 6 days a week is nothing. And the real ones make it about 80 hours a week. That's when you start making six and seven figures. And so if you can build up that sort of endurance, find the right gig that's ethical, and you hone these skills, do not be surprised if you're earning more than doctors and attorneys. That's how the game is played.
That's fantastic. I want to get into this concept of coming of age, because you mentioned that a few minutes ago.
Yes.
What are one or two coming of age moments that you've had as you built this company, if I can put it that way?
Let me go super way back. Like a dominoes effect. The first coming of age moment is when I failed out of private school. I remember before finals exam in seventh grade, big pile of books. It's Sunday afternoon and I knew I was sunk. And it wasn't funny or cute, and there was nobody to blame but yourself. And so I grew up really fast on that. And it's interesting, instead of hitting a home run, I failed terribly. And I never wanted to feel that way again. And I didn't take it with me either. I mean, I know I'm bringing it up today, but you need certain scars to remember. And that was a good one for me, because I was able to get back up, and then I went to public school and things went from there. And then the second coming of age was making an argument to my parents about studying Spanish and not following in family footsteps with Ivy League and finance.
Yeah.
I was a language major, and I didn't want to be put in a box. And I realized this was my argument, actually. Our great grandparents came from Eastern Europe at the turn of the 20th. They learned English. Come on, let me do this. And secondly, I do above and beyond. Outside of the classroom, I'm showing dedicated practice. Anybody that puts above and beyond like that, you have to keep that fire going. I go, that's my argument. So I stood by it. And I realized that if I made that commitment myself, I had to be bilingual and to use this skill. And then the coming of age was at 27, moving abroad, getting past parents' guilt and being selfish and realizing I wanted to live my life. And then the last coming of age was putting my own money down and betting on myself and seeing where it could go. And so, mind you, I'm not the largest call center in the world. Those are kings. There's a lot of princes out there. Could be one of them. So I'm very, very happy to the extent of what happened in my business and my career. I'm more than humble and more than thankful. So those are my certain coming of age chapters that got me to where I am today and pushed me to do this.
Yeah, I love those. I mean, because it demonstrates that who you are as a CEO, who we all are as in our professional lives is so wrapped around the personal, the very intimate, historical, familial character that we've built over the years. And so it's that all weaves into how we run a business, even if we have overcome a lot of those things that we thought were maybe detrimental to us or just not us, not who we wanted to become. So I love that. As you've worked in the company, building teams and, managing the finances and marketing for new clients and that, is there a moment where you reached, that pivotal moment where you said, I don't know if this is going to work unless I do something differently. This has been working or it's going fine, but if I keep doing what I've been doing, it might not keep working. Have you reached one of those moments before?
In the largest moment, you took away my spark, my magic, which made me different, my synergy. You did work from home. You did virtual. You did COVID. As much as I'm thankful and grateful that I was capable of adjusting my business model working from home.
Yeah.
It completely 1,000% destroyed the sort of, I'm going to say the word again, magic.
Yeah.
That was created. No, mind you, there's still company culture and people are communicating in departments and Slack and all that stuff. But man, not even close.
Why is that? What is it about the way that you...
Jeff, seriously, if I'm sitting next to you, and my man, Jeff, is ripping the phone, and you look at me, we're doing high fives, and we can't wait to talk about it. I feed off of that. That's electromagnetic energy transfers of people. hanging out at the lunchroom, it reduces attrition, making best friends. Ah, a bunch of people fall in love, get married, and have kids. I met that in my call center. Some kids are 9 months. Agents still working through the center. Those are Costa Rican call center babies. And so, but me, they got to see me. Got to wear a suit every day. That was fun. But I would walk the rows. I was shadowing. I was there. You said it earlier. Did you see people have breakthroughs? Did you see them grow?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I did. I saw them cracking codes, shedding skin, growing a little chin, you know, hair on their chin, really becoming strong, confident adults. And do I expect them to be with me forever? No. But when they're with me, I want them to be better. And if I can pay it forward in any sort of way, not by paying them and giving them a job, can I go above and beyond some way? Maybe the first boss they ever met, maybe someone that allowed them to sit in a meeting, contribute, and then understand why certain decisions were made, why to help them with their career, sitting down and helping them write a composition or a business letter, teaching them how to take copious notes, teaching some people dictation, teaching some people how to write in cursive. Why? Because it looks good when you sign your name.
Hmm? Yeah.
Those little things, those goodie bags you can take with you that you always remember. And how about this? This is very interesting. And I don't blame them. I mean, people start strong. A lot of people don't give it 2 weeks' notice. They just leave. But when I bump into people years later, they will come up to me and say nice things. They go, listen, you were one of the few bosses that really was interested in my career. Or I remember when you taught me ABC and 1, 2, 3, and, you know, thank you. And you believed in me. And so I guess at the moment you don't hear it, I don't need to hear it. My ego's fine. But when people see you and they smile and you see it's genuine and sincere and they remember 3 nice things about the time they worked with you 9 years ago, that's a beautiful compliment, my friend. I think then I have fulfilled my mission here and doing what I had to do. And so as you get older and you start looking back, you see the bricks that you built and the walls, they become very high. And it's nice to see what you've done.
I really love that. There is a magic to it. You used a perfect word for it, the magic of it. And
I got taken away. I'm bitching about it. Sorry to wait.
Yeah, no. Well, what have you done? What have you been able to do? Not that you can replicate the magic of in person in a remote world, but what have you been able to do to adjust to the remote world that maybe preserves a little bit of the magic for your team?
Business is the same. I mean, I love them to death. They love the comforts from home. I pay them on time. I tell them they're great. What am I doing? I'm doing this. I'm on podcasts. Why? Because my 10 agents don't want to hear the same talk 10 times about moving from Philly and starting a center. They've heard it already. They can come on your podcast and repeat it. So
yeah.
I sincerely, I believe that I have a message. And is it important if it resonates with anybody? Or with a CEO or somebody finds something out of what we spoke about today, then I think it's fantastic. And I have this energy. I don't know what to do with it. And so from time to time, I meet a great person like yourself who's kind enough to put me on your podcast, ask me some fun questions. And as I say, I'm not, please don't call me for telemarketing. You know, you're going to yell at me. But I'm here to share. That's the only way that I could say it, because as I mentioned before, it was an interesting journey. And I just don't want those entrepreneurs out there that have dipped their toe and tasted it. 10 years goes fast. That's all I gotta say. And really, you should do it now if you are able.
Oh, it's a beautiful journey. I appreciate you sharing all that, because there, again, way more to unpack than what we've taken the time to do
deep,
here.
Didn't we?
There is a lot. There is a lot. And it's very, very generous of you to share all of that here at the level that you did. I think we might be to the time now where I get to revisit that question that I had up front. And that question was, you know, what's the business lesson? Maybe there's something that we've talked about today about, you know, the experiences of in person, or the connections that we make, or the fear and the confidence. I don't know what that is, but what is the business lesson that we can walk away with that relates back to how you collect the jukeboxes and the pinball machines and run a business? I feel like there's something there, and I'm just curious to see if this is a successful experiment asking this question or not.
Of course it is. Very, very intelligent question. I don't have 10,000 people. So I can be very selective. And fortunately, the campaigns that I offer and what I pay is highly competitive, so I can be selective. Why do you do this game room? You start with dessert first. Why do you have this here? Because I'm in one of the highest attrition industries out there. Mm-hmm. I'm also competing against Amazon, HP, Intel, Oracle. How do you compete? What do you do? Why do I have these games? So I can be real and normal. I mean, it's incredible the way people look at a business owner. Or I'll hear someone speak to me in a certain way, and if they don't see me behind a corner, they sound different. And then I'll walk over there, then all of a sudden they talk differently. I go, why are you talking differently now? I mean, show me who the real person is.
Yeah.
And so what I'm trying to say is, not in your way, in my own way, I needed to show a certain side of me.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt natural. It felt real. It was non-threatening, and it's fun. And it's quirky. It's different. It's eclectic. It's outside the box. It's whatever the hell you want to call it. But I knew this. People knew my true passion. They saw the way I was playing those games. And it allowed people to approach me, because I'm playing a game.
Yeah.
I can't get angry at someone playing pinball or Pac-Man. And not everybody, I'm not the Pied Piper, but I was able to convert 35% of my workforce that feared a boss, because we're supposed to be firing you, licking our thumbs and counting hundreds.
Yeah.
I shattered that misconception. I knew everybody's name, some nicknames. But 35% then, because I won that portion of the people, went back and spoke for me. We call them portavoz, intercambios. I'm not all in one. I needed individuals that actually were able to approach me, know me, and say, he's not so bad. And when that happened, it reduced that, and more people felt comfortable to at least say good morning or be more receptive. And then there's always 15% that just come and go. You can't do anything with those people. And then you'll have people that are just walking around angry for zero reason, and they're blaming me for what happened on their last job, or they're blaming me because I believed in. This is a weird industry, Jeff, because, you know, it's like a mirror. It's in the pudding. Yeah. Listen, man, if you're on a phone call for 10 minutes, I'm going to pull the call. It's you listening to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
So say what you want. So we listen, and then you'll look at me, and I'll make a face. Meh. And then at the end, I go, you know, you could have done better. Put in some guilt. And then you go, yeah, boss, I could have done A, B, C, and D. That's the best teacher. Allowing Jeff to come back and keep working on his paper. It's not the one-time shot, champ. It's not an exam. I want you to get better. And if it takes you 7 times to get it right, then we got it.
Yeah.
You talked about the 1,000 tools in the tool shed. We're just putting one away at a time.
Right.
And you're doing it from self-analysis, from this self-study, from your own voice. All I can do is tell you timing, vocabulary. You didn't listen, and you missed a mark. I'm just working the edges of you. And that's the beauty of my rudder to your ship. And that's how, if someone can handle that and then bond with me through the medium of the games, We got a winning combination. And how about this? We're not going to talk about your call upstairs. I already listened to it. You already made it. Come on. Why don't we go downstairs, play some air hockey, and we're just going to talk for a couple minutes. And then, boss, I know I miss. Okay. And then, you know, we're going back and forth. And boss, I'm going to do this. And then you're all breathing. You're sweating. You're this and that. And you're going upstairs and everyone's seeing you with your swagger. The whole floor sees you. And then I get a knock on the door at the end of the day and they go, hey, boss, what did you do to me today? I go, what are you talking about? He goes, I'm on fire. And yeah. Then guess what? You got that for the rest of your life. Now you're a supervisor at Amazon and you thank me for it. Thank you. You know, it's so funny. There's... They hire all of my people. All of these call centers, if they come through my call center, they get hired. That's the beauty of the complement of Costa Rica's call center.
I love it. There's something very genuine about your approach, Richard. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you,
and it comes through your, you know, as you're explaining that to me, I can see, you know, the image of the boss playing arcades, playing air hockey, playing pinball with the team, and that there's a, you know, it's not just because you want to play games, like that's fun, but you're connecting. You're creating experiences, you're teaching, like you're using these secondary moments, I'll call them, to really do the work of leadership that you might do in a, you know, one-on-one performance review, but why not do it in a setting where you can open up more and they can perhaps be more receptive. Like there's some magic to that. And I can see why, if you're not able to do that in person, that there's a little bit of magic that's
Tom Hanks and Big. How did he meet the boss and how did he get promoted? It's a perfect scene for it. Play games with your boss.
Yeah. I love it. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation, Richard. Is there one piece of advice that you'd leave for other CEOs listening to this to let them know, hey, if you could do one thing in your business over the next week or two, try this and report back?
Of course. Well, first, I want to thank you very much for having me as a guest today. Jeff, I had the best.
Oh, time. You're welcome. Really, it's been great.
All right, man. Let's call the balls and the strikes. I'll get right there. Do not be hard on yourself, please. At the end of the day, regardless of the outcome, when you put your head on the pillow, rest. And also be able to look at yourself in the mirror. And just realize you're going the distance. If you ever get the chance, and you complimented me today, because I was sharing a lot of things, something's intimate, you know, letting you know what gives me drive. When you really read the biographies of your heroes and those that have accomplished so much in life, it's always Sisyphus. It's always pushing that rock up there. It's always that getting through the desert, off that mountain, the high seas. It's perseverance, it's drive, it's grit, it's all of those things that we all admire so and wonder if we have it in us until we get tested. And so, yes, my advice for these brave entrepreneurs is to do it and report back. Remove that weight and report back. And even if it's a first down, I'm so proud of you. Doesn't need to be Deion Sanders touchdowns. Just give me progress and motion and physics. And I'll even take it at a snail's pace as long as you're moving forward. Jeff and I are proud of you. We'll try to push you a little bit, get you moving and screaming. Come on, three more reps. Come on, you can do this.
That's right.
But I'm not going to touch you. You got to do it on your own. I'm not going to carry you. But I'll let you know. And I'll be there during the good times. But if I got to tell you that one time you're better than that, or come on, buddy, then that's the real friend, the one that talks to you when you need to hear it. And so take it, receive it, and share it. That's the things that have gotten me to be a guest on your podcast today. And that's my advice for you.
I appreciate that so much. And I hope someday, Richard, we have a chance to play some pinball games together. I will not be very good at it probably, but you know, you can show me how it's done. So
absolutely.
And for our guests that have joined us today on the Breakout CEO podcast, thanks for listening in. Hope you took away something that you can apply in your business over the coming weeks, and we'll see you next time.
Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.